Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 53 for August 15th, 2007. Bill in a Box. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, ladies and gentlemen, the show that brings you the latest news about Macintosh, iPod, iPhone, and iJustine. Hello, everybody. I'm Leo Laporte, your faithful host. Scott Bourne is also here. Thank you so much for doing it last week, Scott.
No problem. We appreciate trying to help over at the Bodango Barn.
It was good. It was a good experience for me to see what it was like on the other end of the Skype, and it's a real frustrating experience.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys have put up with this for so long. It's, you know, the host, you're always on, and you're on mic, and you're kind of in control. And then it's just, I'm sitting in my hotel room, and sometimes the Skype is working, sometimes it's not. It's, you know, I mean, I got to pee like a horse. I mean, all of that stuff. So, it was good experience for me to feel like what it was like to be on the other end. I have much more sympathy for you guys. Thank you very much for putting up with this. And Scott, you did a great job. Everybody liked it because Leo shut up on that one. So I'm going to try it this time.
Well, you know, they just pick a different person to be mad at each week.
Scott Bourne is from the ApplePhoneShow.com. He's been a busy guy lately, and we've got a lot of Apple phone news, of course. Andy Inako is here from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Colossal Waste of Bandwidth.com. Hi, Andy.
Hello. Red 5 standing by, as usual.
And we're gonna be, I think, Andy, you're the designated Merlin Mann replacement. Merlin's going to be taking time off this week, but I think more time in the next few months off. He's got a lot of business, apparently.
Awesome. So, I will tousle my hair so that I match his icon.
Will you? Actually, I have a album art with the Andy Inako in it, but unfortunately your head replaces Alex's. So I'm just going to have to work on that and rotate it over a couple of...
I just like parsing that sentence.
My head has replaced Alex.
Speaking of Alex, it's Alex Lindsay from thepixelcore.com.
Hello.
Hey, Alex. Thanks for coming up to Vancouver last week. It was great to have you.
It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I'm slowly getting to know Vancouver.
This beautiful city. Well, you honeymooned there, though, don't you? Well, I guess
took a honeymoon.
That doesn't mean you get to know the city if you honeymooned there. Come to think of it.
Yes, well, I don't think that's
Stanley Park, what's that?
Yeah, exactly.
And you probably heard a girlish laugh in the background there. It is... No, that's not Merlin. That's usually it is, but this time it's iJustine.
Hey, how are you?
Great to talk to you, Justine, from the tastyblogsnack.com and mommypackmylunch.com. Calling all the way from Pittsburgh. And we brought you in because I loved your video. It's on tastyblogsnack.com. Yesterday, you put out a video of your iPhone bill. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was a few pages long.
It came in a box.
I know. It was ridiculous.
What are these guys thinking?
David Pogan complained a little bit. I guess I must be getting mine electronically. Why was it so long?
Well, apparently they give you every transaction, everything that you do, every text message that you send and receive, every call, and it's completely detailed. I mean, it was almost 300 pages and it was double-sided.
So there's a line on the bill for every text message?
Every single text message with their phone number, the time.
It doesn't.
Okay.
But you got to figure they could if they wanted to make it a novel.
Yeah, apparently.
Wow. Actually, that would be kind of handy to get the complete transcript of all your text messages.
It would be. It would be kind of scary, too, though.
How many did you have for a 300-page bill?
It was almost 30,000, which is about average with what I do.
What? Your 30,000 text messages?
I take it you got the unlimited text plan?
Oh, I did. Yeah, definitely.
So really, this is AT&T punishing you. This is
a text plan and you set out to prove it.
This is AT&T saying, Justine, we do say unlimited, but you might want to think about 30,000.
And here's the box to prove it.
Did Blue do anything but text?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is I get all of my Twitter updates, and I do Facebook mobile almost entirely through text messages.
So a lot of it's incoming.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of incoming, but also with Facebook, I especially will, you know, respond back through there, and I don't even use the website.
I don't want to sound mean, Justine, but I have this vision of you sitting at a restaurant, turning down a plate of food while you talk about eating the food on Twitter.
Yeah, that happens. Or filming it or taking pictures of it.
We actually saw that behavior when you were at Macworld in January.
Yeah, you did.
I thought, I don't know why this beautiful woman sat down at our table. That was the first thing, was like, what happened here? And then you're on the phone like the whole time typing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, at the time, it was a Trio.
It was. I still actually haven't got rid of my Trio, which I'm going to do this month, which is kind of surprising, as if I didn't still have my Trio, I can't even imagine how many pages that phone bill actually would have been.
As a pro level, I mean, because I think most of us are really amateur level text messengers, but you're really the pro level, you know, the upper pro level. How would you compare the typing experience between the Trio and the iPhone?
Well, now you shouldn't do this. Texting and driving with the Trio is a lot easier and safer. Whereas,
really, why is that?
Because you can actually know that you're typing the correct letters. And because there's like a little dot on the F key,
you're right.
So you know where your fingers are.
You have to look at the screen on the iPhone, don't you?
You do, but I'm so much faster on the iPhone. So it's a give or take situation.
Must be getting out of the city. I'm hitting fewer people now.
Now, I think everybody on this show now has an iPhone. You must all be getting electronic bills, right?
Yeah, and I got 12 text messages last month, too.
Right. Oh!
So there you go.
Just so
we know, how many minutes did you use?
Only 200.
200 talk minutes.
Yeah.
So you really, this is the younger generation. They text rather than talk.
Mm-hmm. My mother has to text me.
Yeah. No, it was actually, you know, it really works. I was in the movies last night. My wife and I went to see the Simpsons movie, and Henry was at home. And instead of calling me, and I couldn't have answered a call in the movie, he texted me, and it worked perfectly. I could text him back. It was a better way to communicate in that case, anyway.
There you go. And even for like social networking sites like Facebook, like a lot of people don't even go to the website anymore, or you know, Twitter. It's just right on your phone, text message. Why even bother? It's quicker. So those are my thoughts.
Well, anyway, I think. Are you going to now get online and tell them I want an electronic bill?
Yes, definitely. Because I really don't want to have an entire box shipped to my house
again. That's outrageous.
Isn't that satisfying on a certain level? It's sort of like when you pay your tax bill in pennies just to annoy them.
Yeah.
Because unless you really love the phone company, say, you know what? I want it on paper. I want you to pay for an 8-pound delivery every single month. Hey, I'm not paying for it. So, you know, yeah, go right ahead. Give me paper.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it.
What must the cost to AT&T be, though?
Yeah.
Did they FedEx it? Did they UPS it? Did they postal
book rate?
Yeah, it was just U.S. Postal. I think it was like $7.10 to ship.
Awesome!
Yes!
I'm on the website right now switching my billing plan.
Sticking it to the Sig Sigler.
Now it only costs me $53 and change if you balance it out. If you go karmically, that's like getting, that's like free money. Oh, God.
It is.
Well, let's see. I mean, if we all do that, I'm gonna do it too. But just see how long they continue to itemize.
I think we need to think about trees, though. I mean,
One month before they go, oops.
Okay, but I'll tell you what's going to last a month, and that is Justine's contract with AT&T. They're probably going to be sending her one of those letters saying, we'd like to invite you to visit Verizon's website.
Yeah. I'm actually going to call them and do another, and not let them know that I'm actually filming, but just see their thoughts on it and see how many people are actually getting these large bills like that.
David Pogue did it. It was the first to alert us to this. And he said, you know, but I don't, his wasn't 300 pages. This was 30 pages. You know, I mean, he didn't have anywhere near. That's pretty amazing. If you haven't seen the video, it's at tastyblogsnack.com. And I mean, this is no hoax. There it is. Anyway, let's move on because we have a lot of news to talk about. But I wanted to get Justine on and just to talk about that alone. It's just fascinating.
It's insane.
And as always, we want to begin the podcast with a little legalese. Any or all of the contributors to TwitNetcast, their families, agents, heirs, or assigns may hold positions and securities registered to publicly traded companies mentioned on the Twit Network.
Amen.
Basically, Scott Bourne has like $100,000 worth of Apple stock, so anything he says can be used against him in a court of law.
I'm sorry, it's no longer $100,000 million. It's down to $50,000 million.
Did you sell off some?
I sold a few socks.
Yeah.
Sold a few shares.
A little profit-taking, Mr. Bourne, huh?
Profit-taking and dollar-cost averaging are two of my favorite phrases.
Yeah.
So will pay you, off that iPhone bill.
Well, yeah, no kidding. Will you buy? What I would do is sell AT&T stock fast.
Yeah.
So right on the front page, by the way, if you go to AT&T.com, you can say there's a link that says stop your paper bills, and it has a little green leaf next to it. Learn more. Uh-huh.
So maybe this is all about them trying to persuade you to stop getting the the paper bill by sending you a really big one.
Wow.
Good idea, Alex. Alex might have been on.
But no other phone company does this kind of itemization. This is unique.
It is very weird.
It's like they're clueless. You don't get that from your other phone, right?
No, you definitely don't.
Who's your other carrier?
Sprint, and I had Verizon before that, and it was always like 4 or 5 pages. Yeah. And that's it.
They don't itemize it like that.
No.
Every data transfer, they go, on January 4th, you sent 382 bytes. On January, I mean, it's crazy. Anyway, let's go. Let's move on. We've got a lot to talk about. Last week, we spent some time on the new iMacs, the new iLife, the new iWork. We've now had a chance, most of us, to play with it. Scott, you've got one, right?
Well, my iMac is not delivered yet because I ordered it with the 1 terabyte drive, and they're not shipping that until next week.
I got the 500 gig, so that one came. I came yesterday. With the extreme chip in it. Alex, you have some, though, right?
I'm planning to get them. I have to admit that I'm going to be a little bit of a cheapskate, and we looked at it, and I've decided to wait until October so that I can get Leopard just bundled with it.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. A lot of people ask me, because if you come from the Windows world, you definitely don't want to get a new computer until the new operating system comes out, because it's such a pain to upgrade Windows. But that's not true on the Mac.
Mm. It's not a pain, but I'm just being cheap.
It's $129. Andy, did you get your review unit?
I got mine on Thursday. As a matter of fact, I am Skyping via this brand shiny new aluminum PAL. It's very DeLorean-like in my office. I like it.
I got the 24, and it's beautiful. I'm very happy with
it. It really is the first. I think I said this last week, too. This is the first iteration of this like big Etch-a-Sketch iMac that I actually really, really like.
But Macworld benchmark numbers out, and in most cases, it's only marginally, like a few percentage points faster than any of the other Macintoshes.
When was the last time that a Mac user really cared about performance as opposed to, ooh, shiny aluminum enclosure?
Well, exactly.
And it's what
if they made a Mac with a cup holder, they would bypass bypass HP and sales.
Well, PCs have had cup holders for years. You press that button, and out comes a little cup holder. I love that. It's a little small, though. You have to get a special cup for it.
You need Service Pack 2 to get that to work, though.
Ooh, that hurts the team.
Justine, have you purchased an iMac? Will you purchase an iMac?
I have not. I probably won't, but it's tempting. It's very tempting.
They're very beautiful, I have to say. I'm sure you've all played with them. How about the new keyboard? What's your reaction to that, Andy? Do you like it?
I've been using it exclusively. As a matter of fact, I've been carrying it from the iMac to my PowerBook to every other Mac. I'm not loving it. I mean, it's competent. It's okay. It's not painful to use. But every time I switch back to either the old standard Mac keyboard or even better to like the Logitech Wave keyboard I've been using for a few weeks, you just say, on a desktop situation, I deserve so much more comfort than just adequate.
There's no travel on the keys. Mm-hmm. Apple's selling the idea that your wrists are closer to the desk as being ergonomically.
That's justification. I mean, I just don't get that same sensation of I can't rest my fingers on the keys because you put pressure on the key and it registers.
Right.
You just have to. It's just not comfortable enough.
You know, I found it hard to type accurately, but I think some of that is because I'm moving from another full travel keyboard.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with accuracy per se. Again, it's just as comfortable to use as my MacBook keyboard or my PowerBook keyboard. But again,
it's the same as your MacBook keyboard.
Exactly. I mean, so it's not like they gave us a substandard, defective keyboard.
They gave you a laptop keyboard.
Yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, motorcycles are fun, bicycles are fun, but there's a reason why I have a 4-door sedan. That's because I like to be able to stretch out and enjoy the experience. You know, if I don't have to have something that's compact, if I don't have to have something that's thin, why would I bother? There's no advantage to this keyboard, so why should I not have the most comfortable keyboard I can use?
It is pretty, though.
Exactly, it is.
when you put that little thin keyboard, and I don't think the Bluetooths are out yet. I think there's another few weeks for those to come out. So we have a wired one, but when you put that next to the Mac, the new iMac.
You know, I really like the little, that tiny little Bluetooth keyboard. I could see myself traveling with that keyboard because You can just ergonomically put it in so many different situations, and it's such a tiny, I will admit, okay, it's a cool little keyboard. It makes you feel as though you're living in Logan's Run or something.
If you could roll it up or fold it up, that'd be even cooler.
If you could hit people with it that annoy you, it is very, very sharp on the edge. It is a very intimidating keyboard.
I don't, you know, I have a Bluetooth keyboard, and I don't like it because I have to change the batteries too much. Not your problem, huh?
Well, no. Well, again, I mean, I was about to say something I think I said last week, that I actually like to have to, oh, my God, I've been working so hard.
Oh,
I need to
right.
replace the batteries on my keyboard again. Oh, I'm working too hard.
Scott, you better take over. I'm repeating myself.
Well, you know, I like the new keyboard. I only got about a half hour's use of it, though, during the press announcement, so I'm not in a position to make a definitive statement. I was the most skeptical of anybody, at least out of our group, when they first introduced the chiclet keyboard on the MacBook, and then everybody was telling me how great it was, so I realigned my thinking. I think it's just like everything else. If you're used to one system, you're going to probably default to that system.
Now, the big controversy, and something we kind of missed the boat on, I think, last week, iMovie.
Well, I disagree that it's a big controversy. It's only a big controversy for the vocal minority.
You think most people don't care?
Well, there's a lot of people on some of the forums where that whole controversy started saying, wait a minute, are you guys crazy? This is way better. And then Apple diffused it somewhat by making available for download the old iMovie, if you prefer that, because that's what you're used to. I've used the new one, and I got to tell you, I far prefer the new one to the old one.
Alex, you're familiar with this controversy, Alex. What is the controversy?
Well, the controversy is that the new iMovie was rewritten from scratch, and not only is it new, a new interface, a new layout, but they really chose they cherry picked the kind of features they were going to move to the new version, and so there's a lot of stuff that's left out. So, for instance, there's really not really very many or any video filters. So there's also there's no real timeline the way that we would. There's no traditional timeline that we would normally use. There's very little control over audio. So for instance, if you're trying to make a music video, which is something I was playing with for the show that we were doing last week, trying to get things to time to an audio track is. It's pretty challenging, much more challenging than the last version. Other things that people have been a little upset about is the fact that you really need a Mac Pro, a Mac Pro or an Intel chipset to run it. The G4s, it's not, or G5s are not.
You can't run it on a G5?
I'm pretty sure that, I know you can't run it on the G4s, and I'm pretty sure you can't run it on the G5s. This just came up.
System requirements says that iMovie requires a Mac with an Intel processor, a PowerMac G5 dual 2 gigahertz or faster, or an iMac G5 1.9 gigahertz or faster.
So if you're on an older laptop or an 18-month-old laptop or on a 1.8 dual G5, which we have a couple in the office here, you can't run it.
Is that the skimming feature that's eating up all that?
It's probably a lot of things. You know, they're doing a lot of things to make it work. Now, what I will say about this is that, I've played with iMovie a lot and made little videos with it, and then I tried this new one. And I'll say that it was frustrating to not have the stuff when you're looking for it, but I do admit it's really, really fast, when you want to throw something together. So for what they organized it against, it definitely fulfills the idea of we want to make it way easier to do something really, really fast. I started playing around with the video of some stuff I shot and when we were up there for the lab, and I was like, well, I'm going to see what it's like to do it in Final Cut. And I realized by the time I'd gotten through just my setup in the Final Cut Pro project, I had a minute already edited in iMovie. And that was just me getting my clips ready to go to work in Final Cut, And so it is really, really fast. It does have an export to Final Cut Pro, which is really interesting, which means that if you are, especially news, like if I was doing, like when we cover Macworld next year, I think we're probably going to end up using iMovie for it because our ability to just slam things together is much faster than dealing with than Final Cut for something that needs to be out really, really quick that day.
Any other thoughts from anybody else? Scott, you don't think it's a problem that they've dropped. I mean, look at all the things that are missing. You don't have.
Well, here's the thing that's not a problem. You can download the old version if you want.
But it won't be updated. I mean, it's done now. I mean, that's.
Yeah, but if you like the old version, then that's what you want, you can have it. I think, it just depends. If you're a power user, there are certain things you may miss from the old one. There are certain things you may like about the new one. The skimming feature is awfully cool. And of course, I don't have any experience running it on a low-power machine. All I have is high-power Intel machines. But I have to say that for me, it's been very intuitive. I didn't spend 1 second reading any instructions, and I was immediately, you know, putting clips on the into the bin and making it all flow together. Now, I did not try what Alex talked about, which was adding, you know, special audio tracks and such, and that might become frustrating to me because I did do a lot of that with the original iMovie HD. So that's something that'll be worth looking at. Of course, if you get too sophisticated, people are going to just move up into Final Cut. And
yeah, but move up into Final Cut is not a non-trivial. I mean, it's $300 for Final Cut Express,
right?
And what is it, $1,200 for Final Cut Pro Studio? I mean, it's expensive.
Your choices are with the old one or the new one.
Yeah, you do a lot of video. You do a lot of video, Justine.
I do, but I think it almost seems like the reason they did dumb down iMovie is so that people will upgrade to Final Cut Express and be like, well, where's all these features at? I actually haven't even got to try it yet. I bought it the other day, and everyone's like, don't do it, don't do it. iMovie, it's horrible. But now that you can download the other version, I mean, that's really not a big deal.
And also, when you install it, the one thing I noticed that I didn't notice when it first happened, though, is when you when you run the install for iLife 08, it deletes all the other iLives, all the other iLife apps except for iMovie HD.
So they knew that they had a problem.
No.
There's a folder that just says old iMovie, and it's sitting there. And so you can, it actually, if you already have iMovie HD and you really like it, you can have the best of both worlds where you can use the new iMovie, or you can go back to the old iMovie and, you know, just use that if you want to do something that's more complicated. So I think you're really looking at four applications. Now, what we do know is that the iMovie HD probably won't get updated, and within the next 12 to 18 months, it'll be end of life. I mean, completely unusable because of the way the processes will most likely be.
You made a good point, Alex, saying they really should just have renamed it.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been more tempted to call it Home Movie, or and I think some people online were calling it iVideo. I mean, calling it the same name as the other app, I think, is part of what is not managing people's expectations. It really is a different app. It's a completely different app.
Yeah, I think marketing-wise, that's a good call. Marketing-wise, they kind of botched it.
Well, but now you're going to have four different video editing pieces of software. That's exactly the problem that Microsoft faced with Windows Vista. You just don't know which one is going to be appropriate. I like the new iMovie because I think it's definitely an upgrade for people who use iMovie in strictly a consumer context. Because I docked like a 40 gig external hardware, all kinds of video I shot on a cruise around Hawaii without really intending to do any editing with it, but it found the content, it imported it. It was so easy to organize clips, it was so easy to drop things together that I was able to do something with this new version of iMovie that I wasn't able to do with iMovie HD, which was to really just play with this thing and just have some fun seeing what I could throw together. Whereas iMovie, although it's one of the most easy to use video editors out there, it still requires that you have sort of an editing suite, editing console type of mentality. So I think it's definitely a downgrade for people who have a serious use for video, maybe an upgrade though for people who just, there's a need for people who just want to get the damn thing off the camcorder and onto the HDTV in a way that, you know, you turn those 2 hours worth of tapes into something that's not going to be punitive to your friends and family.
Does it make a gap in the product line for something between the new iMovie and Final Cut Pro, Final Cut Express? $100 product, let's say, that's a little more like iMovie HD?
I think it depends on how far it grows as well. I mean, you know, this is version one, you know, and there's, you know, this is early. Maybe we see, you know, the next year. I mean, maybe they update it Macworld, or maybe they update it. You know, there's a lot of options here to kind of push things forward a little bit. So we're looking at version one. I think that also I want to say that I really, after playing with it, I don't even see this necessarily as a consumer only application. You know, after playing with it over the weekend, I really started seeing that, you know, anytime I need to do news gathering, anytime I want to do a rough cut, especially because I have that easy to export Final Cut XML output, I could totally see myself doing assemblies, putting together, as I said, like for instance, a Mac break if we're covering an event where time is of the essence and we need to shoot something and edit a bunch of stuff, and it doesn't have to be timed to music, and we just got to get it out. Those are the kind of things that would be really, really easy and really powerfully done in iMovie, and much faster than Final Cut. I also want to say one thing about the capture. You know, you can capture now. You can say, I want to capture at 960 by 540 on the way in. It appears from the testing that I did that iMovie is actually doing a really smart way of capturing it, which is, not to get too technical, but it's taking one of the fields. If you're shooting interlaced 1920 by 1080, which you never want to use on the internet, it will actually only grab one of those fields and scale it down, which means you're getting this nice progressive scan image, and you're taking up a lot less room on your hard drive on the way in. So for people doing web stuff, this is really a great application. I don't know if there's really that. I think people are going to have a hard time going back to iMovie for many, the older iMovie, once they start playing with this thing. There's going to be 10% of the iMovie population that's going to want to use something else. They're going to go, oh, I need to use iMovie because it doesn't have X, Y, and Z. But I think 90% of the folks, after they use iMovie, the new iMovie, I think that they're going to find the other one tedious.
Now, Alex, maybe you can explain something to me that I didn't understand during my testing. As luck would have it, I got a DVD that I was an unlocked DVD that someone had burned for me, and I wanted to duplicate it to send to a friend. I happened to have the disc image of the DVD still mounted, not the DVD itself, but the disc image, and I launched iMovie forgetting that disc image was mounted. And iMovie actually considered that DVD image as a video source and started importing video clips from that image. Now, is that something that the previous edition of iMovie HD used to do?
You know, I've never actually tried to do that.
It was totally unintentional. I was like, wow, dude. Yeah,
that is awesome.
I'm sorry, I didn't get exactly what happened. So say it again one more time.
Here's what happened. Now, a while ago, I'll try not to send us down a rat hole, but just because this is a good way to thank someone who did something very nice for me. I talked about, I think it was on a Twitcast, about this wonderful production of the Flying Karamazov Brothers, The Comedy of Errors, one of the best TV shows ever. I usually use it as an example of, well, gee, this is why we need YouTube. This is why we need BitTorrent, because we need to keep these old videos alive. And it turns out that the sons of one of the performers in that broadcast is a listener of Twit, and he sent me, like, he replaced my awful, banged up old VHS with a really, really great DVD was like a first generation copy. Obviously, I want to make copies for my friends because I keep telling people how great this show is. the only way to duplicate is to, of course, you go into Disk Utility, you basically tell the application to please turn this DVD into a disk image so you can burn multiple copies from it. So, again, this happened maybe, I did that in the afternoon. At night, I launched iMovie for the first time, forgetting that a disk image of this DVD, for all intents and purposes, it looks exactly like the DVD, only it's not the actual DVD. And what happened was the capture mode just suddenly activated, and chapter for chapter for chapter, each one of these video clips started loading into the editing tray.
Wow.
Section after section after section.
Any other software just imported it?
Just imported it. There wasn't any sort of a DC. Obviously, it was an unlocked DVD to begin with.
Right, it's not a commercial DVD, right.
Exactly. But again, it's exactly as though I'd hooked up a camcorder. It had recognized that a video source had been connected, and it just started pulling video from this thing.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a real feature as opposed to I see all these video clips that seem to be on an external storage device, and I'll try to make sense of them. I wasn't able. The only thing is, it was loaded with errors, so I don't know whether this was just maybe a bug in the program where it just misidentified this volume as a source of video. Because it would seem that if Apple had released this as a real feature, because this would be a great feature, because how many times has someone burned you a DVD of, you know, the kid's birthday party or their vacation, and you say, oh, wow, that's great, I really want to edit it, and you don't want to have to rip it in Handbrake, because that does another analog to digital conversion that will give you a generational washout of the thing. I don't know if that's a real feature or not. Now, I'm not at the point yet where I start calling my people at Apple, because I like to at least spend the first week not relying on any unusual sources of information. But I really want to know what the story is behind that, because is a feature, that's an awesome feature.
My only guess is that it could be the added compatibility with with some of the new formats. So there are DVD cameras,
right?
You know, they're shooting the DVD.
Oh, there you go.
So I think that it might be that they've added compatibility to be able to see a DVD because they need to be able to be compatible with those cameras. So my guess is, listening to this, is that's probably what happened. It probably is new to iMovie, this new version, and it's just adding compatibility to the cameras, and you just happen to be an innocent bystander, you know, with an image.
Collateral damage.
Yeah, you're just collateral damage going by.
Alex, so. When I was at the launch, Apple was pimping this new Panasonic camera with a new HD format. What do you know about that?
It's a. It, this is the. I don't know if it's. I'm not sure what the Panasonic format is. There's a variety of MP4 or H.264 formats that are based on these that are, you know, straight to drive captures, and so those.
This one
are,
uses. This uses SD cards.
Yeah, there's. You can do straight to hard drive that are internal. You can do SD cards. Those are the two big ones. And there's a variety of different cameras. There's the X-Acti one is probably the one that most people that I know that like their little handheld HD cameras are using.
It supports the X-Acti out of the box.
It should now. Yeah, I believe.
So in other words, if I take that X-Acti SD card, plug it in, it'll act as if I plugged in a.
It does support that because I have the new version of the X-Acti and I plugged it in Saturday and it worked fine.
Neat.
Yes, that will be the Panasonic HDC SD1. I actually have one in front of me right now.
Oh, neat.
Oh, okay.
How do you like it?
I like it. I mean, it's lightweight, small. It's just like a toilet paper tube with a lens in it that records HD. That's always a nice thing, isn't it?
what's the model number, Andy?
I'm reading the side. It says HDC SD1.
Can you do that in that funny voice you do with the numbers? And
I have so many funny voices. The one I'm using right now.
We're just taking voice requests. So what other features do we like in the new iMovie? I have to say, if you've played with the skimming, and that's not just iMovie, it's across iLife entirely.
Skimming is a big, big win. I love skimming. I hope that's going to be like a really embedded feature in Leopard because, you know, you go from what the hell is it doing now to, oh, it's doing something awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of Minority Report in its appearance, you know.
Can you describe what it does, Scott?
Well, yeah, skimming just you drop clips into the iMovie, and then you think that they're just a static little icon representing the clip, which is what you'd be used to in other applications, and then your mouse pointer accidentally wanders over the clip, and it starts playing, and you're like, whoa, what was that?
You can actually scrub through it, which is amazing.
Yeah, and more importantly, you can click and edit through it. So you can actually click in the skimmed version of the clip, set your in and out points, hit the E key, and boom, you're in business.
Justine, you probably use Final Cut for all the video you do, right?
Yeah, I do, but I did just get iMovie 8, so I'm probably going to install that tonight because I'm kind of excited about it.
I'd be really curious if you could do what you do, because you do some things like that parkour are heavily edited.
Mm-hmm.
I would be really curious if you could do it in iMovie.
For smaller things, I do use iMovie, but again, like Alex said, if it's something that needs to be done quickly, because it exports in really great QuickTime quality, and it's fast. So
there are little things you'll miss, though, and Alex, you found this out when you were doing it at the lab. For instance, let's say you want to cut to the beats of music. There's no easy way to do that.
Probably not, and even audio editing is always very difficult in iMovie, which...
Well, it's non-existent now, so
no,
that makes it easier. You can't
add it, and make it.
You can't do it.
Brighter and darker. That's about. It. I mean, light. You know, higher or lower, but that's about it.
Yeah, are there any other applications? You can skim in other applications too, right?
Yeah, you can. Well, sort of skimming. Yeah, iPhoto does the sort of thing when you put in the events. You can skim through all the photos in the events. Events represent collections of images that were all taken on the same day.
So you're skimming through all the photos in the event.
Yeah, once again, you would think that you're just looking at an icon, but what you are actually able to do once you touch it with the mouse pointer is skim through it.
A little mini slideshow.
Yeah, it's very slick. Once you see it, I mean, it was clearly the moment at the press conference. I mean, you heard the audible,
Yeah, and being able to just simply, for grabbing clips, being able to skim through and then you just click and drag and grab that part of the video that you need and drag it up there is just... It's crazy fast. You know,
it's
just
awesome,
it really is a really great thing. And by the way, Leo, the format you were talking about with the new Panasonic camera is an H.264 AVC codec.
Ooh.
It's called the AVC HD codec. It's a 1440 by 1080, which is pretty much what HDV is as well. It's you think of it as 1920 by 1080,
but
really
more
it's
compact than MPEG.
It is. It'll be smaller than the MPEG 2 format, which is what the HDV is based on. Whether the actual video quality is higher or lower, you know, I haven't gotten to test it yet. So
that's completely dependent on implementation, right? Because H.264 could be high def or it can be lousy.
Well, it just it depends on how high they turn that, and a lot of times they're trying to fit it onto that little card. And I think that the bandwidth I believe is about 1.5 megabytes per second, which is a fair bit less than I think we're looking at 3.5 megabytes per second for MPEG 2. Now, it being just smaller doesn't mean anything because H.264 is a lot more efficient than MPEG 2. So it could be equal or close. It's kind of hard to tell until until I actually get my hands on one. But it is, these cameras look really promising. I have to admit that I'm really looking at buying some kind of solid state camera soon, just because I love my HV20, but I hate the tape drive. You know, still time is just,
it really is.
They were
really
selling these things at Apple. Sorry. Go ahead, Andy.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was saying, because I've been noodling with this for the past like 10 minutes now. I took it out for a spin a few days ago, and it really is I'm about to repeat a line that one of my gun toting friends once used, and it terrifies me. It's the sort of thing that really makes you want to shoot something. It just fits so well. It's lightweight. It's not a hassle. You don't feel as though you have to really baby it, because it is all solid state.
What's the list price? How much are they selling it for?
It runs about, I think the street price, I think the list price is about $1,100 or so, and the street price looks to be $800 to $900.
That's not bad.
They were really pimping these things hard at the press conference, Leo. I was surprised. They had them everywhere.
One chip, right?
Yeah, if you want, you can spend $1,700 street price to get the 3CCD model.
Ooh, same form factor?
Yeah, same everything.
So I'm looking on Amazon, and wait a minute. This says 3CCD, $565 on Amazon. That's the HTC DX1? Oh, no. You're looking at the SD5, aren't you? What's the model number on this?
I can't remember. We've already used more model numbers and acronyms.
I know. I'm confused.
We've used up our allotment, in fact.
The HTC SD5 AVCHD 3CCD flash memory high definition camcorder with 10-inch optical image stabilization is $999 on Amazon pre-order.
We're using some naughty words that we have to spell for you, but Mommy and Daddy will tell you what we're really talking about.
And then if you want the single CCD, click here to see the price. It is $799. So for $200 more, you get 3 CCDs. Would you recommend going that way?
Always.
Always. Three's always better than one. Plus, it's a black body versus a silver body.
It's a grain issue.
Oh, I like grain.
Yeah, if you like grain, then stick with the one chip. You know, it does add that kind of I shot it, you know, on a really camera kind of look.
Interesting.
I believe that both of these, and I'm trying to find it right now. I'm kind of very quickly trying to go. I believe they all have HDMI output as well.
Now, we've talked about this before. In order for that to be useful, you'd have to be able to...
Oh, no. Yeah. So they have HDMI output. Well, here's the thing about this with these cameras. This is one of the reasons we got into the HV20. This is the Canon. Is because the HDMI output coming out of the camera is actually pre-compression. So you're getting the raw video that's coming off the chip. It's at 422, so it's not completely...
So on something like this particularly, it would be useful, since it has to compress a lot to put that on the chip.
So if you're on the road and you just need to shoot something, well, you shoot it at on the memory card and it's going to be compressed. But if you're in a studio environment and you want to shoot your little set and you want to have more quality, and this really comes down to especially when you want to color correct. So you want to play with the colors, you want to play with some of those pieces, having more data there really helps. Now the difference is that your HDV, your AVC HD format, the one that's going to the drive or going to the little memory card, is 1.5 megabytes a second. It's about 90 megabytes a second coming out of that little HDMI. So you'll need a fast drive.
How do you record the HDMI? Is there a converter to FireWire? Or
you need to buy. This is when you're getting serious. So you're going to need to buy. You spend $250 on a Blackmagic Intensity card, and the Blackmagic Intensity card will take that HDMI in. And now the next thing you need is a drive that's fast enough to capture 90 megs a second. so then you need, then you're going to buy a RAID, or you're going to RAID your internal drives on your Mac Pro, which you can do.
The 3CCD sounds like a good deal for $200 more. It's $1,000. I think Merlin Mann's going to kick himself, because this is basically the same price as the HV20 was.
And it wasn't available when Merlin and I both made the decision to buy the HV20s, when this stuff wasn't available. These are brand new cameras.
Now,
exciting.
It's an hour on a 4 gig card. So, it does eat a lot of, but it's still 4 gigs, 1 hour. That means that's a lot of bandwidth it's using up.
What's exciting about that, though, is the faster than real time capture as well. Because one of the problems is that you
you
get an hour.
Digitize it.
4 gigs, I can on a good card reader, I can pull, you know, that 4 gigabytes off in a couple minutes, you know, and clear it. You know, so 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you know, I can pull that off that card. And that's exciting, because otherwise, you know, you're shooting for an hour and then you have to capture for an hour to bring it back in. And this gets back into what I'm looking at this camera for, what I'm looking at these solid state cameras for, is I'm really looking at Macworld Expo right now. And so I'm looking at, I can go capture, you know, all these interviews and all the stuff that we do. Then we can pull it off the drive really, really fast, throw it into iMovie, cut everything together, and boom, we're done. You know, or at an Apple event or at a news event, anything we want to do quickly. These look really exciting.
According to Amazon, it's this 3CCD version, which sounds like the one to get, will be available September 15th.
I just ordered it.
I did too.
It was a race to see who gets it first.
It will soon.
I mean, and it's pretty small, right? I mean, it fits in the palm of your hand. Andy, what's the form factor feel like? Does it feel pretty usable?
Oh, absolutely. It's just about as big as it needs to be. I'm saying that oftentimes you have the stuff where, like, okay, this would be nice if there weren't this big, huge cube that was hanging off the side.
My wife said all the time, but she doesn't buy it. I don't know why not.
Oh, that was just not, that was beneath you.
I'm so sorry. I couldn't resist. I tried, but I just couldn't resist.
And you know how kind I was to sort of pretend that I didn't know what you're talking about, so that you could say, oh, no, nothing. I didn't say anything.
I said nothing? What are you talking about? I meant the camera.
Oh, okay.
Just about as big as it needed to be. And because it doesn't have to put tape in there, it doesn't have to put...
Yeah, exactly.
There's no moving parts.
It's like a metal tube that's about 2, maybe 3 inches in diameter. It's only about like 4 or 5 inches long. It's squared off at the bottom so it doesn't roll off the table when you set it down.
That's neat.
The only thing that I wish it had was a little bit... In my hand, I find that the zoom in and zoom out feature button is a little bit too forward on the body. I have to sort of manipulate my hand to get to it. But then again, if you have any class whatsoever, you're not supposed to really use the zoom feature, so right. No great loss. But yeah, no, it was a lot. I only had it out for a couple hours a couple days ago, but it was a lot of fun to shoot. It's the sort of thing where it doesn't... I've tested out so many different camcorders, and even though I'll drive up to Vermont with the intention of, well, here's it's autumn, and there's going to be all these wonderful things to shoot, and all these wonderful leaves and that sort of thing, and I'm there to really test out this camera, but it's just no fun to keep hauling it out and powering it up.
That's the real problem, I think. You don't want to shoot video as a tourist or as a... As somebody who's not a pro, it's just a pain. But somebody like Justine or Alex, this sounds like a really pretty cool thing.
Yeah, all I was saying was that this is the sort of thing where it's just not a hassle to carry it around and
you
use
don't mind
it.
Pulling it out. Yeah.
Well, it's a good shape.
And one of the things one of the things we've been playing with is using things like the, you know, you take these little cameras and, you know, the lens elements are the thing that you have the biggest complaint about, you know, because as Scott will attest to, you know, the glass is everything, you know, so we can talk about all these, you know, cool little cameras, but the glass is really what makes a difference. And most of these cameras have cheap little glass. And so one of the things we're going to be actually using on the lab next month is the Red Rock Micro little lens adapters. So you can actually put these little lens adapters onto the front of these little cameras, and then you can put real lenses on the front of the cameras. And I know it sounds crazy, but you end up with these.
By the way, this one does come with a Leica lens, though. It's a pretty nice lens.
It's good. It's good. It's nothing like having but there's nothing like literally you can get a lens adapter that can take all your cool Canon lenses.
Well, of course, I better have one of those then.
What?
You'd have to have one of those, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Any further thoughts on the new iLife or iWork before we move on?
Just want to say that I've been playing a lot with the new Keynote, and I'm very impressed.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to get my hands on that.
I mean, the big thing that we sent some emails back and forth, but there's a couple things. One is the Keynote. When you look at they have an intro that comes with it, and when I realized that that was a Keynote project, you know, I hit escape and started cutting through it, and it's like a master's course on how to use Keynote, because I mean it's just really, really well done. The other thing is that with GarageBand, I'm really hoping that Apple opens up some kind of development pipe or development path for the Magic GarageBand. I don't know
if you guys played that at all.
You could create your own magic GarageBand templates.
If you can imagine, you know, if I wanted to, what if I knew how to play an instrument, which I don't really, other than the didgeridoo, I could play along. You know, so yeah. I could make my instrument there and play along.
No, you should. Then make that didgeridoo could be a front, right up front.
Exactly. I could put it in there. But the idea is, I could play more guitar riffs or more drum beats or more whatever, and sell those as an add on that would make the instruments much deeper, you know, inside of the given genres that they've already provided. But then I could also add genres. Maybe I want Indian or Japanese or African or electronica, or, you know, all these other genres that, you know, people could add, you know, people like Apple Bandmate Loops or whatever, you know, the guys that make all these loops that work with all the stuff. What if they started building much, much larger ones? If people really got into that, it'd be quite a little industry, and you really could put together something that sounded relatively original, because there'd be so many different options available.
I showed my son the Magic Garage Band. He's actually in the studio now recording his first CD. 13-year-old guitar player. He loved the idea. I mean, he thought really. Oh, he actually said cool. He thought it was really cool. Start playing with it immediately, and of course, you can customize it right away.
Right.
And even save those out. So, in a way, you could make one that's customized somewhat and save it out.
I'm just happy that you can finally send an MP3 directly from GarageBand.
You can.
Oh, that's going to be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's the simplest little stupid thing. And like, oh, wow, cool.
You know? Well, they never had MP3 built in, right?
No, you'd have to go to iTunes and then convert. And it was a pain in the butt. Now you can do it. I mean, here's the funny thing. You buy something like Pro Tools, you have to pay extra to be able to convert to MP3 out of Pro Tools.
They want to spend the $3 to Fraunhofer Corporation.
Well, it's like, but it's more like, you know, $39 or $49.
Okay. Yeah. Justine, what would you use this for?
The GarageBand?
No, the MP3 output. You sounded excited about it.
No, I am, because usually I would just create like simple little loops and then have to export it into iTunes and then save it in MP3, and that's quite a hassle, whereas you could just create something very simple and that's it. Just export it.
I thought maybe you had a secret career as a recording artist that you've been making GarageBand songs, Aaron.
No, but we used to make like podcasts and stuff like that, so it's just so much easier to use GarageBand.
Well, that's true. You could make a podcast now straight to MP3. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a good reason.
Yeah.
I also think that when you start looking at between iMovie and GarageBand, these exports to YouTube, exports to, you know, you're really looking at the slowly closing gap between the creator and distribution. Yeah. That should make Hollywood very, very scared.
That is scary.
Not if they actually saw YouTube videos, they wouldn't be.
Yeah, well, exactly. We thought that would be the case with the original GarageBand, where it had an export right away to iTunes. And we just kept waiting for Apple to turn on the feature, now, you know, sell it on iTunes, and they never did.
I think the big problem is dealing with individuals as far as, I think it's the cash flow issue. They don't want to write check. They don't want to write 100,000 checks for $20.
Is there I guess eMusic or somebody is a clearinghouse. CD Now is a clearinghouse for that.
CD Baby.
CD Baby, that's it.
There's a couple of them. There's two or three of them right now that are clearinghouses for that type of thing. And you know, there's a lot of bands that are starting to pick up speed. I mean, one of the things we were talking about on This Week in Media was the fact that a lot of bands now are starting to give away there's bands that are experimenting with the idea that I'm going to give away my music and make all my money on concerts.
Well, they've always been doing that. They just didn't realize it.
They just didn't realize they could just give away all the music. Right. You know, they were like, you know, when you look at Prince making $20-some million on his tour, you know, the income from the album becomes, you know, a second, you know, secondary thing.
Lights Off, the first iPhone game. It's pretty clear Apple plans to sell games on the iPhone, just as they sell games right now on the iPod with video. We see strings in the iPhone. We see strings in iTunes. But some clever hacker, actually the folks who have done it are Lucas Newman and Adam Betts, have created a standalone app. Now, you have to do this whole, you know, jailbreak bit to get it in there, which I haven't had the nerve to do.
Has anyone hacked their iPhone yet here?
Anybody do that? See, I don't want to mess with it.
I don't either. It'll make me cry.
I'm really tempted. I downloaded Lights Off. I came this close, and I couldn't bring myself to do it.
I'm just gonna say three words: Leo, Apple TV.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't have to buy a new iPhone because it went wrong.
I did a bad, bad thing. I told a friend in innocence, without any ulterior motive, about this awesome Nintendo emulator that I just found out about on the iPhone.
Very cool.
And so, wow, how good is it? And I said, well, I don't know because I haven't installed it. Oh, wow, well, can you install it on my phone? And I said, yes, Jeff, I could install it on your phone. Why don't you lend it to me overnight, and I'll show you how it goes. So I was able to like install all the software and see how it went. Although I'm with you guys, I mean the problem with I've got four.
So it worked.
Five.
You did it to his phone. It worked.
And it worked. I haven't tried this newest game, but this is not going to be something that any casual user is going to be even remotely interested in, because it is a really, really sticky, cut grass, stuck in sand, down your underpants, difficult and itchy sort of proposition. Again, I'm a person who happily takes things apart and puts them back together again. For God's sakes, next week I'll take delivery of six identical cell phones so that I could abuse each one in a different way just to see which ones will survive. So I'm really not, you know, intimidated by this sort of thing. But man, I just don't like the idea of doing all that root level stuff to an iPhone.
So I'll just read you the instructions, folks, so you can see if you feel up to this. Installing third-party applications on your iPhone is not for the faint of heart. For more in-depth instructions on iPhone modifications, look at the iPhone Dev Wiki. Just that phrase alone is a little scary. 1. Download iActivator and use it to, quote, perform jailbreak on your iPhone to allow access to the entire file system, which is necessary to upload applications. 2. Install SSH on your iPhone and follow the instructions to copy the application to your iPhone. You may also need to run the command chmod plus x, quote, applications, /lightsoff.app/lightsoff.
Yeah, see, that's another big problem with these jailbreak apps, because essentially you have to install software that, by definition, you have to install software on your iPhone that allows external computers to access and take control of the device.
I'm just worried that Apple might disable it somehow, or, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, Apple did go out and explicitly say when people started hacking the Apple TV that, no, we're not going to do anything to try to disable hacks on this device. They haven't made any such promises on the iPhone. I think that maybe they're using this as sort of an incubator just to see what the market is going to be, what the palatability is going to be for third-party apps.
Well, AT&T probably has something to say about, that hacking stuff going on.
Yeah, you think maybe there's something contractual about how Apple will not allow such and such to happen?
Yeah, I'm going to guess that they have a lot at stake, because if something goes hooey with your phone, you know, they're going to get a million phone calls overnight. And
I think the other thing they may be more worried about as well is you're already starting to see some people using being able to set up Skype calls, you know, from the phone. You know, there are people starting to do, you know.
Well, there is. There's already a website. In fact, I tried to do that today. Because that one didn't require any installation. That you do on the Safari. You surf via Safari to a website. In fact, I'll give you the site because I actually just did it today. And I tried to place a call. What it looks like it's doing is using a third party to place the call. So you have
that's not going to get you in any kind of trouble, I'm sure.
You give it a callback number, which is your iPhone's number. When you log into your I'm a little nervous that I've done this now. You log into your Skype account, and so you're giving it your Skype login and password, right, through this website, and then
Mrs. Khadifa from Nigeria,
and then you give them your iPhone number.
God commands me to help you make free phone calls.
I did this, so look, if it backfires, it'll backfire on me, and I'll let you know.
Leo Laporte was arrested today for channeling money.
So here's what you do: you log into your Skype account on this website. Remember, it's on the iPhone, so it looks like it's an app. And you give them your phone number. And then you get, I mean, all of a sudden you see all your Skype contacts and everything in there. Just like it looks like Skype. And then to place a call, you enter in the number and then it says, we'll call you back. I waited and waited and waited and nothing ever happened. So I don't know.
Oh, something happened, Leo.
Your little Skype account's got a whole bunch of phone calls from Nigeria.
Yeah, the credit card transaction on that camcorder, that didn't go through, did it?
Oh, have you seen the, I'm not sure, I think it's Mac Daddy World, that they created some sort of hack to do two-way video conferencing?
Yeah.
And it's so obscenely stupid looking at what you
it
have to
is.
Do. I'm like, but you know, at what point in time do these people stop to think about what they're actually doing? Well, if you stand on your left foot in the middle of Niagara Falls on the third Thursday of the month at 5:03 a.m. and scratch your head, you'll be able to do this.
Yeah, but there are people saying that sort of thing about the Wright brothers like 3 weeks after their first flight.
That's
60 days later without any support or encouragement from Apple. They're doing some incredible things on this thing. Yeah. I mean, imagine when Daddy gives them permission finally. Daddy actually gives them the keys to the car instead of having to sneak out with it. Oh, man. Just
I guess that's why. Kind of, I guess that's why I haven't been.
I'd be like Klingon voice. It will be glorious.
It is a good day to hack. I guess that's why I haven't put all this stuff on here, because I just keep thinking any day now Apple's going to open this up.
Well, I do have an immediate solution to this problem, Leo. We should open up. We have MBW ideas. We should have iPhone hack ideas where people could just send us their iPhones to play with, and then we'll put these hacks on, and then we'll.
So, well, if you want to try it, it's skypeforiphone.com if you want to try it. And maybe I was a fool. Have I been a fool?
It would be my recommendation that you do not try it.
Okay.
Just I don't know if you've been a fool, but you have been reckless.
I have been reckless. But I was so excited that I could.
That's your job. All of our jobs is to be reckless.
I took
a bullet
for you. I took a bullet for our audience. So you give them your Skype name and password and your phone number with area code. You tell them what kind of Skype plan you have. You give them your social security number.
And your credit card.
Well, I did it.
I suddenly noticed that I had 5,000 minutes left, and then I had two, and then I had 6,000, and then I had two.
An AT&T delivered a 12-pound bill.
Freight shipped it.
It's from Shape Services.
Trouble sometimes, Leo.
I just feel like, I was stupid. All right, just for that, I'm going to hack my iPhone right now.
Yeah.
Just since I've already screwed the pooch, I might as well go all the way and buy a dinner. Okay, all right.
May as well build it into a baseball hat.
I'm downloading iActivator, and I'll do this during the show while we're talking, and I'll perform a jailbreak, ladies and gentlemen, right here on live on the radio.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that Universal is releasing DRM free?
Yes. Isn't that exciting? It's the beginning of the end. No, they decided. Didn't we talk about this last week? Did we not talk about this?
Talk about that? I don't think.
Well, we should talk about it.
I think you and I talked about it, but I don't think we talked about it.
And we talked about it on Twit. So what happened was EMI released their results, and it looked really good. They sold considerably more on iTunes than they had before. Dark Side of the Moon, so like 300%. More sales. Now their overall revenue went down because CD sales were so dropped so much. But I think Universal said, it worked for EMI. Let's try it. But you're right. They're not doing it on iTunes. Of course, remember, Universal's the one that went month-to-month with Apple. So they're kind of have a tense relationship anyway.
I think they're trying to figure out whether they can start to weaken iTunes by providing other more interesting outlets.
Well, they're right, because right now I could go to Rhapsody, buy Universal Music at 256 kilobits. I mean, really high quality MP3s without any encoding. Now, they do put, just in case you feel like you're then going to share it on the net, they do encode information into there, just as Apple's doing with the EMI stuff, so that it is yours, but it's not protected. So you can play it on your iPod. And that's the thing. I can now buy iPod music on Rhapsody.
Is it Rhapsody that makes
Rhapsody
it available?
Rhapsody is one of them. There are a number of stores they're using. Yeah.
I believe that Google also is helping them out with that. Some of those pieces as well, with their new Gbox. I don't know if I have it right in front of me here, but so there's a couple different outlets that they're gonna try. But all of them, I think that there really is a push to try to see if they can undermine iTunes by doing this. But I think that what it's really doing is undermining the interest in DRM at all.
Well, it's a really interesting thing. Now, you know, Steve Jobs has stepped forward and said, we don't want any copy protection. It's kind of interesting that these companies are saying, okay, Steve, but we're not going to sell it on iTunes. We'll sell it on other stores, strengthen other stores, and strengthen our position, our negotiating position with the number one digital store. That's very interesting. That's actually credit to Universal for doing something smart.
I think this is just a negotiation strategy myself.
Well, it's a good one.
It is. And of course, their ultimate goal is to force Apple into paying them for nothing, like they did in Canada, and with the Zune, stuff like that, where, you sold one of those, we get a check no matter what.
Right.
And I still think you get into this problem with people like me that just, it's too much trouble. You know, like I just look at it and I'm like, well, I'm still going to buy my stuff of iTunes. And if it's not there, I'm not going to do it. I just don't want to deal with it. You know, I don't want to deal with it. You know, that's and that's the issue that they're going to get into, is that a lot of people who are doing it, I don't think I'm the only one. You're the same way, Justine?
Yeah, if it's not on iTunes, then I just don't buy it.
Yeah.
Convenience is very important, isn't it?
And now I have to admit that I'm getting into a position where if it's not from EMI, a lot of times I go, well, maybe I'll go to, you know, and get the disc.
There you go.
I don't want to, because now I'm kind of sensitive about the, I became much more sensitive to the DRM issue after the EMI, after I had the choice to get higher quality, not DRM free.
That's why I'm so curious to see how this DRM stripping really plays out, because my attitude has always been that if I am interested in more than 3 or 4 tracks on a CD, I'm going to go down to Amazon and I'm going to order the CD. I mean, just last night, I was on iTunes. I was buying like about $20-$30 worth of tracks, and I found so many songs on the Sam Cooke Best of CD that I actually, couldn't contain myself. I actually drove down to the, for God's sakes,
oh, you're
the mall.
Weird. You're
the,
weird.
The analog Amazon. And I actually bought a physical DVD and handed money to a pimply faced teen.
Why? So you wouldn't buy it on iTunes? Why?
Because, I mean, if this is what I do for all CDs. It's like, if I buy it on CD, it's uncompressed, it's unlocked, I have physical media, so if I have a hard drive crash, I still can re-rip the CD. I can re-rip it at any bitrate
want. Yeah.
I mean, again, at a certain time, and also, there's also sort of a loftier, crushed velvet suit, sniffing a lily sort of pursuit, which is that this is the way that I get to listen to music that I'm not interested in. I'll get the half dozen songs that I actually want, but then I'll also get to listen to 11, in this case, 11 more songs that I would not have bought otherwise.
Well, one thing about any competitor, whether it's a real live one or one that's just trying to negotiate with iTunes, the one thing that I read about the other day, which just shocked me, was the number of locations that sell iTunes gift cards.
Yeah,
you can get them at like gas stations and grocery stores.
Are you ready for this? It's in the hundreds of thousands. They ain't selling Universal cards there. They're selling iTunes cards there.
Yeah. Ironically enough, the Universal ones are actually quite limited.
Yes.
They're not Universal.
Get it? That's a semantic joke there, you see, because
it's Universal, and you can buy it at Rhapsody.
We'll dub in some laughter later on. Don't worry about it. We can fix it in post.
Any other stories before we get to our picks of the week? Going once, going twice.
I'm ready with my pick.
Good to go.
The only thing I'll say, and this is like a 20-second thing, I really am impressed with, getting back to iLife for 1 second, I really have to give props to Pages. It's the first time that it's actually been a useful tool
Woo-hoo!
To me. I was testing out the word processor just to test out the word processor, and for God's sakes, it's been my main word processor over the past 3, 4, 5 days. It's slick, it's efficient, it doesn't do everything that Word does, but it does enough.
Makes me kind of sad because Nisus Pro just came out, and I'm rooting for these guys. I bought it, but I have to say I'll probably end up using Pages.
Pages rocks.
It's really amazing.
Hasn't iWork been the biggest boon? It used to be Keynote and the free apps you get with Keynote, and now it's actually a suite of three really solid business apps.
Has anybody used Numbers seriously for anything yet?
I've been opening, looking through Excel files with it.
There you go.
And it worked seamlessly.
I fixed my best friend's 14,000 record Excel-based comic book database with it.
And quite appropriately, because now you can embed the images of the comic book in there and...
And I didn't know how to file Spectacular Spider-Man along with Amazing Spider-Man, not knowing that that actually split renumbering in 1940.
So did it import it quickly and effectively before I get to...
Yep, he's having problems with the old version, opening it in Excel.
14,000 is huge.
It's huge. And Numbers opened it just fine, navigated through it just fine.
How about you? Great. What did you do with it, Scott?
I imported 4 years worth of stock data in an Excel sheet into Numbers, and it was just boom.
Well, that doesn't take very long. Bought Apple, watched it go up.
No. I'm talking about lots of numbers. I'm talking about
8 seconds for calculating the depth of your money crib is now 11 feet.
Poor Scott, we really rib him. It's just because we're jealous.
How much would that be if it was only $100 bills instead of $1,000 bills?
Wow, that would be 40. I'm talking about performance data.
Ah, yes. Are you going to use, instead of Excel, you're going to use Numbers for all of that?
I happily, this morning, removed Microsoft Excel from all my computers.
So you're going to trust your nest egg to a Numbers?
I happily removed Word from all my computers when I got that thing, Abbey Word or whatever.
Right.
And, but the reason being is they run so slow under the Intel processors. They're like dogs.
It's really nice to not have any Microsoft software in your
system. Yeah, and that's the other thing. It's like I love being a pure blood.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always go with the best thing available. I don't get any added joy out of it not being a Microsoft product. You always have to put your money where the best solution is.
Well, I agree.
That's how Macintosh got its start.
And the good news is, though, we don't have to use Macs anymore. I mean, Microsoft anymore. I don't know. I never was comfortable with Microsoft Office on my Mac. It seemed like the memory management from day one was different. It was just more Microsoft-y.
I don't miss it a bit now.
No.
One thing that I thought was interesting is there was an article in PC World about Apple beating Microsoft at its OpenXML game. So that the new Apple apps actually support the OpenXML before the Mac versions of Microsoft Office. So it's
all right. Before we get to our software picks, let me get a book pick for you. Of course, this program brought to you by the good folks at Audible.com. We are so happy to have them as a sponsor for the Twit Network. Because we're Audible customers, we love Audible. We listen to Audible books. I just finished Harry Potter, and I love audiobooks. I think books like that especially just sound so much better when you're listening to them. Audible has tens of thousands of books from every publisher under the sun, read by the best readers. They just sound fantastic. They've got some great management tools for you, like MyNextListen, where you can automatically put books that you want to buy automatically with your subscription when the time comes. There's also a wish list, so you can keep track of books you want to read but haven't gotten around to reading yet. And, of course, all the books you've ever read on Audible are there, available for download later. I've got hundreds of them, and that's really a nice feature. Audible.com. And, by the way, right now, if you join Audible, you get a free credit for a free book. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak. And I think Andy Inoko has a book he'd like to recommend. I mean, I still have the George Takei book on my list. Could it be better?
As an entertaining, but in a different way. This is a book that I really, really enjoyed. And even though it came at me by real surprise, I bought it as cassettes like 4 or 5 years ago. I wasn't the kid who was into the top 40 records. I wasn't even the person who was into the, hey man, I go to the used record store and get all the really good European imports. I was into comedy albums. I was the guy who was looking for Stan Freberg albums. Yep, I was looking for George Carlin albums. You know, I could tell you every stroke of a Bob Newhart routine to the word. And I really wish that there were still people making great, well-produced comedy records like the National Lampoon used to.
Yep.
Or
the Firesign Theater.
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically just 40 minutes of just straightforward performance start to finish. Yeah. And I had a really great blast from the past when I wound up buying Al Franken's You're Good Enough, You're Smart Enough, and Doggone It, People Like You. This is obviously based on his Stuart Smalley character from like 10 years ago, Saturday Night Live. When he had the movie out and was really, really, really popular the character, he also came out with an actual book of daily affirmations.
But
this audiobook is totally different. It's a comedy album in which you're listening to Stuart Smalley in the studio trying to record his self-help visual actualization record.
It's not going well.
And it's not going well because he's like, now I'm a perfectionist, so I've decided that we have to use everything that we record. We don't have to record everything I say, but otherwise I'll be editing and I'll be rethinking myself. Then you hear a voice from the control room. So should I not have been recording that? What? That thing about, you recorded that? And then there's silence. And then 5 seconds later, hi, this is Stuart. I had to take 2 weeks off from the recording. We're now really, really...
It's funny that you recommend this because tomorrow on the GizWiz, it's my pick as well. I agree with you. And I got it as a cassette as well. And if you might have listened... all the Al Franken books are great. He reads Lies and Liars and he reads... Rush Limbaugh is a big fat idiot. He reads them all in his voice, and it's hysterical. The new O. Franken factor also. But I agree with you. Go back in time to Stuart Smalley. Can I play a little bit? This is actually part of the piece you were talking about. He is so good, so funny.
I would never finish it. So, before I started, I made a solemn vow to myself not to edit, no matter what, that whatever I do would be good enough, and it doesn't have to be perfect. Because I'm a human being, and human beings are not perfect. Okay. So, this tape will not be perfect. And that's okay. It will be perfect in its imperfection. Okay. Before on the tape, I said that guided visualizations are powerful stuff, and that I am not a licensed therapist, and that I was afraid that I did not know what I was doing, and that possibly I could harm someone. And I think that was thinking, and a form of beating myself.
Anyway, here go. It's not long. It's 49 minutes, but it is very, very funny. Oh, my gosh. One of the funniest things I've ever heard. Good Highly picking. Recommended. Don't use your credit for that, though, because it's only $8. Use it for something else. any of the Al Franken books would be great picks. If you want to take advantage of this offer, go to audible.com/MacBreak, audible.com/MacBreak. We do thank them for their support, and I agree with you, Andy. Great pick. I love that. Love that. Very funny. Time for our software picks. Who wants to start? Let's see a show of hands. Anybody? Anybody?
I'll go first.
All right, Scott Bourne, you said you had one. Go for it, dude.
It's actually a hardware pick, though.
Okay.
I have to preface this pick by saying that if you've had any experience with Bluetooth headsets, you know that there's a universal truth, and that is that they all suck.
Yes.
But that having been said, there are some that suck least than others. And the one that sucks the very least is the new Bang & Olufsen ear set 2. Which I picked up at the Apple store over the weekend. And if you want a really cool sort of Borg-looking Bluetooth headset to go with your iPhone, and you don't mind spending more than half of the cost of the iPhone at $350, this is the Bluetooth headset for you. It has the best range of any of the Bluetooth headsets I've tried. It's the most comfortable fitting, the best sound. It's not exactly $350 worth, but it is cool.
It's beautiful. Right ear only, I noticed.
It is right ear only, and there's no negotiation on that point. Now,
do they make a left ear version so you could buy both?
I don't know. You know, that would be cool, and you could sort of do mono.
You
sum.
Could spend $700 on the
Apollo Western.
The thing is, I did. You know, I wrote about this on the blog. I did sort of expect to hear the voice of God for $350.
Yeah,
and I didn't.
You could have healed several sick children by spending this money in Africa, Scott.
I know.
But no.
Clean
but
water for half of Chad, but no.
It is the best. It's just only marginally better than the ones that are like $129. So unless you just want to have the best, you don't really need it. But it's my pick because I want to have the best.
Yeah, I read your blog comment on it. It was very tempting, I have to say. You know, I'm using, I can't remember the name now. I'll have to find the name for you. I've been waiting for that Shure connector, of course, and that's the one I'm going to get when it comes out, the one that will not only be an adapter for the iPhone, but also have the mic built into it. And then
I've got one of those that works really well.
But not for the iPhone.
Yeah, you can pick it up at the Apple store right now.
Oh, it's out.
Yeah.
And then you could plug your Edemotics into it or your
yeah,
expensive
yeah.
Shures. Oh, yeah. I thought it wasn't going to be out yet. I pre-ordered it. I didn't know that
they have it sitting at the Apple store on Stockton Street.
I'm running
out. How much is it?
It's like $30 or $40.
Ooh. That way you can use your good headphones, still have the microphone capability. Does it also have the click to pause and the double click to move on?
It has complete functionality of everything that you have. The only bummer is you got all these wires hanging around you.
Yeah, it's a little more wiring, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of kludgy. The only way to make it work was to do that. But you're right. I mean, you know, I got a bunch of other nice headphones I want to use. But when you don't want headphones and you just want a headset, the Bang & Olufsen is pretty cool. And I will say that it is the closest to looking like a Borg I've ever come.
I don't know why they put that laser pointer above your ear, but, you know.
Yeah, why do they do that? The bright blue light shining from the back of your head. What is that supposed to do? It makes you look really weird.
You're on.
Yeah, I will do my pick. I've been struggling with Firefox for so long on the Mac, and you know Firefox 2, it's just been a little less powerful, and so I'm really trying. But there are features I really have come to need from Firefox extensions, things like the Delicious extension and so forth. But I want to use Safari because I really feel like, you know, I'm on a Mac, I should be using Safari, and I have to say it is faster than Firefox. It really renders very quickly. And I've, you know, Merlin mentioned one great extension, Puka, in the past. It's one of Merlin's picks for Delicious, and I've got a great little QuickTime script, and I just press Control-D, just as I did in Firefox, and I'm able to post to Delicious. So that kind of solved that for me. But now I've got a plug-in for Safari that I just love. We haven't talked about Inquisitor, have we, recently?
I don't think so.
This really might turn you into a Safari lover, believe it or not. It's Inquisitor. It's free. It's a Safari add-on. If you search for it's InquisitorX.com, or if you search for Inquisitor 3, basically it adds Spotlight capabilities to that Google bar. So as you start typing in the Google bar, Inquisitor will start giving you Spotlight-style search results, auto-completing as you type, including Amazon, Flickr, MSN. If you just hit return, it'll go to the standard Google search just like before. But the autocomplete really adds some value to this as you're typing. It's absolutely free. It's from InquisitorX.com. And if you do use Safari, highly recommend. And if you don't, these are the same folks who do Newsfire, by the way, which is a great RSS reader. And if you don't use Safari, this might be enough to get you back on a track with it. I have to say, has anybody here used Safari? Or are you all Firefox guys now?
Firefox.
Yeah.
I don't even own Firefox.
Firefox, I find, crashes a lot for me. Or Beach Balls. Beach Balls. Mm-hmm. You too, Justine?
Every so often, yeah, but it's better than Safari for me, though.
Well, and there's things that, for instance, like Google Spreadsheets, you have to have Firefox. It won't work in Safari.
Yeah, that's true.
And that kind of bugs me.
I have to admit that I use Safari primarily for all of my RSS reader type stuff.
Great RSS reader, yeah.
Yeah, so being able to stack, 30 different ones together and have just have it part of my regular web browser and have my delicious tags in it and all that other stuff. Having one place, that's how I post. I do all my delicious, like all my research for MacBreak or Twint, This Week in Media or whatever, is all done in Safari.
Yeah,
and then
the
I do
reader.
A lot of other stuff in Firefox. Yeah.
Right. Take a look at Inquisitor. I think it's the kind of thing that makes you go, wow, I got to go back to Safari. Free from InquisitorX.com. Andy Inoko, do you have a pick for us today?
Yes, and it's a dull one, but it's actually one of the most valuable ones. It was recently I realized that one of the best $30 I ever spent was to upgrade from QuickTime to QuickTime Pro, because it's one of those tools that once you have it lying around in your system folder, once all those hidden features of the free QuickTime get unlocked, you use it all the time.
That's true.
Every time I record a podcast on my desktop, I don't use GarageBand because it's way overkill. When QuickTime can record audio, it'll do it much, much faster, much, much more reliable. Even simple editing, like just I want to delete all the uhs and delete all the, oh, Andy, you're such an idiot. We're going to start all over again. It's easier to delete those things when you're just selecting it from a timeline and deleting it. And then I use GarageBand just to clip all those things together. Whenever I want to convert video into an iPod format or to a 3G format on my phone, I use QuickTime Pro. Over and over and over again. It's just that little thing that's inside your system now that will take a really, really hard and unmanageable problem and turn it into a very, very quick 5-second fix. Whereas before, again, if I've just converted a DVD with Handbrake and it's a DVD that I burned off of my TiVo and now I want to delete all the commercials, in iMovie, it's a long process and I have to convert it to DV format. It's going to take up hundreds and hundreds of gigabytes. QuickTime Pro, it's perfectly happy to just take this 500 megabyte file and just let me clip out the commercials. It's fast, it's efficient, and it doesn't eat up another 10 gigs of hard drive space. Again, you buy it for the $30, it's done, and then you will surprise yourself at how often you'll wind up using it, especially if you do any business in media.
I have to say, one of the first reasons you would buy it for the full screen playback is now moot because Apple upgraded that capability, so you can now get full screen playback.
The key is being able to edit your little videos. I just want to cut this little bit out.
Yeah. You can't do the trimming in the free version?
No.
That's a nice feature.
Or it's just simple things of taking two clips and making one big movie out of it without re-encoding the whole damn thing.
I'm so used to all these features because I've always just buy QuickTime Pro the minute the new version comes out.
And I'm really spoiled because we have all these Pro apps and it automatically installs with all the Pro apps, And so you always end up with QuickTime Pro and I'll go to some computer that doesn't have it. And I'm how do you guys operate without
it won't
QuickTime
do that.
Pro? Like, what
the? Yeah. Hey, I should mention, by the way, thank you for your pick, Andy, as we go on with these picks, that there are two websites that keep track of our MacBreak Weekly picks. I want to thank Jerry Brito. He started a new one called mbwpicksoftheweek.com. And literally, it's got every episode with the picks and lots of notes. And then there's another one that's frankly quite beautiful. These guys are putting a lot of work into this stuff. It's very, very nice of them to do this. And this one comes from... who is it? I got to get his name right because I want to give credit where credit is due. Is it Matthew Pocky? It's mbwpicks.com. He doesn't put his name on here, but it's a beautiful job. It's Paul Mason. I'm sorry. Thank you, Paul. Paul Mason did this. So a couple of places you can go, mbwpicks.com or mbpicksoftheweek.com if you want to get our picks, because we're too lazy to do it ourselves. Who wanted to go next? I heard a voice. Was that you, Alex? Did you want to go next?
I have one. Okay. I have one. By the way, while you were talking, I installed the Inquisitor, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, there you go. It's just something. Yeah. Suddenly now I have something that I'm going to say, oh, I can't live without it.
In fact, I typed in Mac Break Week, and I got Mac Break Weekly show notes.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah, it's yeah, really, really, yeah. Really useful. Yeah. So I'm picking into the future.
A pick from the future.
I'm picking into the future because I'm really excited about an application, and it's not available yet, but they have a website, so that's good enough for right now. Yeah, I think that the beta, they're going to have a beta that's starting soon. They're saying that they're having a beta soon. And this is called Pixel Mater. Have you guys seen this?
Yes.
Oh, you can't really tell until you actually play with it, and I haven't played with it yet, but it's pixelmater.com.
I think it's open source, too, right? Isn't that?
I don't think it's open source.
Oh, it's not, but it's going to be free.
I don't think this is going to be free either.
Okay.
I don't think so. And to be honest with you, I hope not. I hope that they make some money on this. I hope they make a lot of money on this because I really want this to progress. Now, it's like a little Photoshop. You know, so it appears when you're looking at it that it's been written completely, and it looks like a Cocoa app. I mean, it doesn't look like it's. I think it's completely a Mac editor. It is using a lot of the features and a lot of the all the interface stuff that Apple gives you. But what it's letting you do is a lot of the stuff that you would normally do in Photoshop. Now, I don't think that I'm going to be using this instead of Photoshop anytime soon. But I know that one of my big frustrations when we're doing stuff on the lab or when I'm doing stuff for MacBreak or other things like that is finding an application that is inexpensive enough for people to actually play with, and I think that this is more of an issue now because Photoshop CS3 is now they're using that really idiotic registration process that they were infected by from Macromedia. Macromedia did this, and I literally stopped using their applications because I was tired of, a computer would go down, and then I'd have to move it, and then I have to deregister something and then re-register it, and I was like, and I just literally just stopped using it. And that was the last time I used Flash, was years ago. I was just like, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore. And so now it's infected the entire CS3 line.
That's right.
And I love CS3. It's a fantastic upgrade, and the registration system is asinine. And so
it hasn't infected Lightroom, oddly enough.
Because they're not in the leadership position yet. As soon as they're in the, the thing, but what they've done though, here's the thing is that casual piracy is gone. People who just happen to get some, their friend had the installer and the serial number is gone. And what that does is it opens a gap for somebody else to move in. I mean, it's a really, bad move on Adobe's part because they're going to open stuff up for applications like this. And so these guys are the beneficiaries of that issue. And it looks like a gorgeous app. I don't know how much it's going to cost, but I bet you it won't be very expensive. And I think that people should go check it out. And they should also, if you're interested in beta, and you should go up there and tell them you want a beta.
Have you
and
been
stuff
able
like
to get a copy? Because I
haven't gotten a copy
I filled
yet.
Out the form and everything.
I don't think the beta starts until later this week. I think.
I just want to point out. I always get a little nervous when I see this beautiful presentation, but no code behind it. It's easy enough to do a great website. There is an open source core. They're basing it on Image Magic, which is open source. So that's encouraging. Okay. It means, and it's these two brothers, and they're very open about who they are.
Right.
It's a London-based company. I agree with you. I've been watching this with great interest, waiting to see if it actually materializes because it's just gorgeous. It's a delicious generation product. If you know what that means, right?
It's a what? Say that again.
The delicious generation.
Yeah.
That's what they're calling the latest kind of really beautiful Mac apps based on the delicious library. The success of Delicious Library. And on spec, it looks fantastic. I just want to see a release version.
I thought that meant that you looked at the apps while you were at the House of Prime Rib.
Yeah, I know. No, that's what they're calling all of these kind of slick new apps, kind of because Delicious Library kind of said, look, you don't have to have a brushed metal window. you can do something else, and have beautiful graphics and so forth. And this is very much in that style.
Yeah, it looks really cool. So hopefully we'll have more to talk about that later.
I agree with you. Justine, got a pick for us?
Yes, I do. I'm not sure if you guys have checked this out yet. It's Mailplane.
No.
Have you seen
Mailplane?
Mailplane. Mailplane. And that's mailplaneapp.com. It's basically just a skin that you can wrap around Gmail. But it's good because I have multiple Gmail addresses, which most people do. So instead of having to log out, log back in, it'll have like an account overview that you can just click from each account to each account, and it'll just show up in this window. And you can also use shortcut keys, and it has different drag and drop, and you can just send pictures directly from it. So it's really cool. And wow. It also uses notification too, which is great. And if you click on the notification, it'll take you right to the message where you can just reply. It also has a built-in like an iChat.
It's a client for Gmail that runs on the Mac, kind of?
Yes, it's still in beta, but I know there's some invites running around somewhere. But it's changed my life for email. It makes me want to reply to people.
Do you have to use it on the web? Or
No, it's a downloadable application.
You download it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And no doubt it was developed by AT&T.
It probably was.
So it's mailplaneapp.com.
Yes.
And I agree with you. It'd be nice to customize and make more Mac-ish, make Gmail more Mac-ish.
So that it's very Mac-ish. Nice.
And you have multiple Gmail accounts, so they all look different?
Well, no, I mean, they each are the same. It's just a different address, because I'll use one for, like, personal and the other for, like, business. So it's great to have them both there at the same time.
In one mailbox. I get it.
So it's really cool.
Very cool. Mailplane for Mac OS X. That's a real find.
It is very cool. I'll send you an invite.
And Andy Notko. Would you send me an invite? Thank you.
I will.
Thank you. Andy Notko.
Well, I was looking around the other day, and I realized that
sounds like just the talk
that I have is actually sending in the $30 for QuickTime Pro.
Oh, wait a minute. You already did that. Stop it. I'm sorry. If I left anyone out, I think I haven't.
Just yourself, maybe.
No, I did mine, Inquisitor. So we're done. I forgot.
We're free at last.
Merlin Mann will be back next week with his picks or anti-picks. And that was fun last week, by the way.
I like the anti-picks.
Yeah, we might do that. We might alternate that. The lot of votes on other. In fact, somebody sent me an anti-pick that was really good. He said, "Oh, now I'll see if I can find it in my email."
Because there isn't enough hatred in this world. We need to up ante.
These are Mac apps we hate, Justine, that we wish we didn't have on our computer. That there's no reason for.
Oh, good news, listeners. We found the address of the person who came up with that spreadsheet program we all hate. He's going to be out of the house next week, so bring those coordinates.
Anyway, guys, hey, thanks so much for joining us. Justine, go back to perusing your AT&T bill.
I will.
You can catch Justine and her great videos at tastyblogsnack.com and mommypackmylunch.com. Anything else you want to plug? Are you still doing the iJustine.tv?
I am, of course. It's about month number 3.
Oh, my God. So you're on camera right now?
I am, and everyone's wondering what I'm doing.
Oh, I didn't know that. So it's justin.tv/iJustine?
Mm-hmm. Or you can check it out at iJustine.tv. So
or just go there directly.
Either one.
iJustine. Mm-hmm. I can't believe you haven't stopped.
I can't believe it either, to be completely honest.
I thought by now you had long ago given it up. Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yep.
iJustine.tv. Andy Inako is not on TV all the time.
Not all the time. I'm going to be on the CBS Morning Show in a couple of weeks doing horrible things to those cell phones I talked about.
Oh, that'll be fun.
That should be fun. Again, I'm not sure if it'll be anything useful, but it'll be great TV, and I'll get a free trip to New York out of it.
There you go.
We'll win.
You can catch Andy, of course, in the Chicago Sun-Times and on his website, CWOB, the Colossal Waste of Bandwidth.com, CWOB.com. Alex Lindsay's at the Pixel Core, where they are not only training the next generation of 3D and video and graphic artists, but getting them work as well, and producing podcast after podcast at pixelcore.tv. You just did a TWIM. Is that the latest one?
We did TWIM over the weekend, and then we're doing another one tonight. And then I got VFX Show is we're recording late at night as well.
Excellent.
And then we have a new one. If you go over to pixelcore.tv, it's called Mac Break Tech. And it's a much more geeky conversation. I'm not actually in it, so it's geekier than me. So John Foster and Ben Durbin and Kenji Kato are kind of hubbing that. And they have a couple other guys that are coming in for that. But it's starting to build. I mean, it was funny. I thought it was too I thought it was too niche to have any kind of, you know, it was like, I was like, well, you know, you guys can play with that, but I don't know how many people will listen. And I asked John the other day, and it was like, I think they were, you know, you never know what the numbers really mean, but it was, you know, in the tens of thousands.
That's great. Well, there has been an episode since May, unless I'm wrong. So you've got a new one coming out.
No. They're coming out. There was a little bit of a break over the summer, but they just put another one out last week.
Okay. And, well, it's not on PixelCore.tv, so you must immediately update PixelCore.tv.
Yeah, so it's a fun new one, and definitely worth checking out. You can also just go up to iTunes and search for it.
Mac Break Tech for the hardcore Mac heads.
Yeah, exactly.
Scott Bourne continues with the Apple Phone Show at applephoneshow.com, and there's plenty to talk about still. You know what? I chickened out. I didn't upgrade my iPhone. When I saw what I had to do,
good.
I said,
I feel better for you.
I'm not going to do that.
By the way, we want folks to stop by because there's a few weeks left. You have a chance to win an iPhone. All the details are on the blog.
So get in there. Last chance, last few weeks to get in there. And I think that wraps up this particular episode of Mac Break Weekly. We'll see you again next week. Another Mac Break is broke.